You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
What a week.
Thank you, New Hampshire. Tonight we made history.
This film is about Mitt Romney, his mission to reap massive rewards for himself and his investors.
That's been an image that people have tried to paint of me, that I'm some angry black woman.
No place in this book do I call her an angry black woman.
Friday, the 13th.
With the exception there, that last bit of playful sound, the sound of some of the top stories of the week. And those stories, and some you might have missed, are the subject on this Friday the 13th of our regular Friday panel. Jeff Yang writes the Dow Jones column for the Wall Street Journal, blogs for our co-producer WNYC's It's a Free Country. Morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
Our good friend Farai Chidea, journalist and blogger at Farai.com, also with us. Good morning, Farai.
Hi, John.
And Ron Christie, Republican political strategist and political contributor for The Takeaway and co-producer WNYC's political website, itsafreecountry.org. Ron, good morning to you.
Top of the morning, John. How are you?
And you're over in London.
I am from BBC in London.
Let me just say, shouting at you via satellite across the pond, that you called it, dude. I have to say, on this program a couple of weeks back, Ron Christie said, and I'll share this with you guys, Farai and Jeff, that conservatives would find a pathway, even though they were ambivalent about Mitt Romney, to supporting him. And the polls showed in New Hampshire they did. Ron Christie, will that trend continue to South Carolina?
I think it will. I think Governor Romney has the means, the opportunity, and the organization to do quite well in South Carolina. The northern part of the state, up near Greenville, is where you have the most evangelical base. But as you head towards the coast, as you head towards Charleston, as you head towards a lot of the wealthier areas, a lot of the golf courses and some of the retirement communities, he stands to do quite well. So I think that pathway remains intact for Governor Romney. I predict that he will do very well in South Carolina, could very well finish first, and could very well wrap up this contest pretty soon.
Farai Chidea, do you buy that?
I do, mainly because, of course, the pro-Gingrich pack is the one that has produced when Mitt Romney came to town, which is this half-hour, you know—
Critique of capitalism.
certainly critique of Mitt Romney and Bain, and a semi-critique of capitalism.
Bain being the private equity firm that he founded.
Exactly. But the votes that would go against Romney are going to be split between Santorum and Gingrich in South Carolina. So there's not going to be a real traction there, I don't think.
Very difficult scenario of a Gingrich win in South Carolina or even a Santorum win. Jeff Yang.
Well, you know, the last couple of polls that have come out recently have shown a closing of the gap to the extent that that's actually going to produce a change in the actual tenor of the race. Hard to say. I agree that it's really about the wild card, that if one of the other, you know, not Romney's and Santorum specifically, were to decide to, you know, collude, you know, with Gingrich, then there would be some likelihood that Romney could get a bad surprise all of a sudden, a January surprise. But, you know, as it is, I think I have to agree with Ron that to a certain extent, that whole paradigm of inevitability that Romney's been trying to build is starting to take root.
Starting to crystallize. Jeff Yang, let's shift gears. We started this hour with a pretty interesting discussion of that viral video of the soldiers desecrating the bodies of Taliban fighters over in Afghanistan. It's gotten a lot more play than even some Academy Award-nominated documentaries on Afghanistan. Is this a one-week story, or does this persist and threaten to even define the war, in your view?
Well, when we think about the wars we've had in, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan, the tropes that have been most persistent, the ones that unfortunately have really defined the way that the people, you know, who are fighting those wars have been increasingly perceived, have been some of these viral images. And we think, of course, of you know, in Iraq, the
Abu Ghraib
photos and so forth. And I mean, it's incredibly damaging to the way we're perceived in the world, the way our fighting forces are perceived. And it's, I think, something that has to lead us to start questioning the very way that maybe our soldiers are perhaps being encouraged to, which is not something solely specific to our military.
But it's been condemned all the way from the top of the Pentagon down, and we did talk earlier this morning about the sort of confused logic of a soldier these days. But the consequence of that video really comes from something you observed in the Las Vegas this week, the proliferation of cameras and electronic devices in combat zones and everywhere in the world, for that matter. You were at the Consumer Electronics Show,
yes,
which has become a cultural touchstone for the globe. Can you give us a report from the
From the trenches,
yeah.
I can tell you that you should expect to be talking to everything now. Your car, your living room, not just your mobile phone. We are definitely seeing what you mentioned in terms of sort of this immersion in the sensors and cameras and in things being aware of us and talking back to us when we talk to them. That's kind of the vision for consumer electronics that's being seen, and it does definitely reflect a very changed view of society, one where everything is kind of listening and surveilling us, but also responding to us.
Death of the keyboard, Ron Christie?
I think we're headed in that direction. I have to say, I am guilty as charged. I have an iPhone 4S. I love talking to Siri. She and I have a great relationship. My wife got a little jealous, so I had to buy her one so she didn't think I was having an affair with the phone. But I think the days of the typewriter have left us. I think the days of typing on a typewriter could soon be behind us, and it could be a voice recognition system, and I'm all for it.
Well, my kids don't even know what a typewriter is. Farai Chidea, let's shift gears for a moment, although I'd love to hear your comment on technology for a moment. But another big narrative this week was the question that was raised by Michelle Obama in an interview with CBS News that she was being portrayed as an angry black woman because she was portrayed as a powerful black woman behind the scenes in the White House in the new book, The Obamas, by Jodi Kantor of The New York Times. What's going on here?
Well, you know, basically, and you played a clip from Jodi Kantor saying, I never called Michelle Obama, the first lady, an angry black woman. That is true. However, she goes into, you know, basically what are turf wars between the first lady's staff and the president's staff, some of which included profanity, not on the first lady's hand. But the reality is that in America, strong black women are seen as angry black women. And we saw the first lady booed at a NASCAR rally. There's a lot of, you know, not so subliminal anger that does have, I believe, a racial component, because when Nancy Reagan was wearing designer suits, nobody complained about it. When Jackie O was
there was some controversy about it at the time that unemployment was so high. I think that, I remember covering the stories. It was definitely a completely different narrative, but there was criticism, I think.
I think there was, but I think it had a different tenor. There were a lot of people who saw it as, you know, sort of the glamour days. But you're right, there were some critics. But I do think that there's what I really see and what I wrote in one blog post was that if anything, Michelle Obama is portrayed as a black tiger mother, you know, like sort of this fierce, you know, because raising kids in the White House, I've been to the White House private quarters, you know, for a tour. It's a fishbowl.
It's a fishbowl.
You have to raise your kids in this weird, like, hermetically sealed semi-private residence.
It's a fishbowl with microphones.
Yeah.
Ron, go ahead.
John, and here's where I take exception with my friend Farai. I worked, don't forget, in the West Wing for 4 years. There's always a tension between the East Wing, where the First Lady and her staff reside, and the West Wing, where the President and his political advisors preside. And I have to tell you, for Michelle Obama, I've read the book. I actually thought the book was very, very favorable towards her. I thought it was very fairly written in her depictions, but the tensions between the East and the West Wing are very real. And for the First Lady to say that the book sought to portray her as an angry black woman, a book she hasn't read, I think only fuels the narrative that, oh, well, if you're criticizing me, it's racially based. If she needs to read the book. I have. I thought it was very well done. And having worked in the West Wing for 4 years, I can tell you the tensions that the Obama White House encounter are similar to what we had in the Bush administration, the Clinton administration before us. It's nothing new. It goes with the territory.
Jeff Yang, did Michelle Obama play the race card?
You know, so I have to really kind of disclose here that I'm an unabashed fan of the First Lady. I think that there is a sense in which she's not speaking out solely about the book, but about a media narrative. And the media narrative has unquestionably put her in a kind of weird place. I think that
So the coverage is what's put her there. That's what Jodi Kantor said, not the book.
Well, the coverage and on the lead up to the book, what the media has, in a way, kind of picked up on in a lot of the things, the rumors, the whispers, the talk around her has, I think, unfairly painted her.
All right. Well, Jeff Yang, Farah Chidea, Ron Christie, it's Friday the 13th. You scared?
No.
All right. Nope. Jeff Yang writes the Dow Jones column for the Wall Street Journal and blogs for our co-producer WNYC's It's a Free Country. Ron Christie also is a contributor to isafreecountry.org and is a Republican political strategist. And Farai Chidea, journalist and blogger at Farai.com. Keyboard is dead, Farai?
Well, yes. And also, Happy King Day.
Happy King Day. Thank you very much. That's right. It's King Day weekend. We've been talking this hour about the video out of Afghanistan. It's gone viral. It appears to show four Marines urinating on the bodies of Taliban fighters. Earlier, we talked to journalist Sebastian Younger, co-director of the war documentary Restrepo. Here's what he had to say.
I mean, for a 19-year-old soldier in combat, you know, it's really puzzling that it's okay to waterboard a live human being, and it's not okay to urinate on a dead one.
Conflicting messages from the Pentagon and from American society regarding responsible behavior on the battlefield. What's your reaction to that? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post a comment at thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry. Celeste Headlee is out today. This is The Takeaway. Happy King Day, folks.